Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1 with Opel and the all-new Opel Crossland. Beauty isn't scared of life.
Great news on the temperature front there, Brian. Thank you very much. The row in government over the issue of increasing the number of countries on our mandatory quarantine list is continuing. The Attorney General has written to the Minister for Health, Stephen Donnelly, warning that it could be illegal to charge EU citizens to stay in these hotels. In a moment, we'll be joined by the CEO of IBEC, Danny McCoy, and also Aoife McLysett, Professor of Genetics in Trinity College Dublin, and also a member of the Independent Science Advocacy Group. But first, one of the countries on that proposed list is France, where they've closed schools as they grapple with another wave of COVID-19. And I'm joined now by Sharon Gaffney, who's a journalist with France 24 for more. Good morning, Sharon.
Good morning, Claire. How are you?
Thank you very much for joining us. We know that COVID cases in France have been rising significantly over the last couple of weeks. Will you just take us through what the president had to say last night?
Yes. Well, we heard from Emmanuel Macron last night, who told us that the lockdown restrictions, a lockdown light, as we're calling it here, because it's not as strict as the lockdown we had in France a year ago. He said that those restrictions, they're currently in place in 19 departments, including the Greater Paris region. They're going to be extended across France from this weekend. What's different this time, for parents, particularly for children, schools are going to be closed. Now, France has prided itself on being able to keep its schools open since the first lockdown. And they actually describe it as the French exception. So that's what's really going to change for parents. They're going to feel that for the next 3 weeks, primary school parents, then also for secondary school children. They're going to be off for an additional week, but they are planning to have the schools back open again by the 26th of April.
And Sharon, can I ask you what the situation is there with variants in France? Because that's the big concern when we talk about mandatory quarantine in Ireland, that we're trying to shut the door to these variants.
Well, that's it, Claire. Cases here, they were pretty much stable between, say, about mid-November and mid-March. They were hitting the 20,000, 25,000 mark per day. We had the Prime Minister actually in the Assembly this morning talking about how from mid-March, over the span of just 2 weeks, cases increased by 55%. And he said that was just a dramatic jump, largely fueled, pretty much completely fueled by what they call here the British variant. So that's what the government are saying. In order to try and clamp down on cases now, what they're hoping for is that the vaccination campaign got off to a very sluggish start here, as it did right across the EU, really, that they're really going to be able to vamp that up over the next couple of months. By mid-June, Emmanuel Macron told us last night, the vaccination campaign will be open to people under the age of 50. And they've also opened, and they will be opening more of them, these mega vaccine centres, as they're calling them. So from next week, the Stade de France, that'll be open to up to 10,000 people, they say, will be able to get vaccinated there per week.
And mandatory quarantine, mandatory hotel quarantine, is that in existence where you are in France?
No. Well, borders are open to EU countries at the moment. In order to come into France, you need a PCR test, as you do to go into Ireland. And that has to be carried out less than 72 hours before you go. Now, there is a tiny exemption. If you can't carry out a test at your airport of departure in very, very limited circumstances, you can contact the French embassy and ask them for an exemption. But you need to be travelling on what they call very pressing reasons, and you can just be refused. So in that case, if people arrive into France, they say, I couldn't carry out a test, they will be subject to an antigen test arriving at the airport, and they'll be sent to a hotel for 7 days, that'll be designated by French authorities, and they'll have to test themselves after 7 days, PCR test. But to be honest, Claire, I haven't heard of quarantine being an issue in France at all. As I say, these are very, very limited circumstances. If somebody really needs to get into the country and for some reason wasn't able to do a test in Ireland and then aren't able to do one at the airport when they arrive in France. So we're talking tiny numbers. Generally, you can come into France. I have colleagues and friends who, you know, they're talking about having just come back from holidays in Italy before Italy clamped down again. People are travelling to the south of France, up to Brittany. We had an exodus from Paris when the lockdown light as such was introduced back on the 20th of March. You could no longer travel interregionally here in France. But people, They have done that, and they last night again, actually, the national rail operator, its website crashed because there were so many people getting online and trying to book train tickets before these new restrictions come into place on Saturday. Bookings are up by 25% since last night. So people are moving around. They're subject to PCR tests going in and out of airports. But up until this week, you've been able to, for example, travel into Spain by car without having to do a test. So you've been able to just go across the border. Same with Italy. Spain, those rules changed just there on Tuesday.
Sharon, thank you very much. Sharon Gaffney there joining us from Paris. And as I said, Danny McCoy is with me and Professor Aoife MacLeod. Danny, good morning to you. You're very welcome. You're very concerned, and you've written a letter about this, about the potential, the idea, the proposal to increase the number of countries on the mandatory quarantine list from 33 to increase it by 43 countries. What are your concerns?
I think it's a reflection, Claire, of the business model we have here. Ireland's success in having the resources to actually deal with COVID in terms of our hospital system, our education system, is predicated on our business model, which can't depend upon the domestic market alone. So our resources are from the assets that are in Ireland to be able to trade globally. So everybody recognises that mass transit at the moment into countries is not advisable, but going for putting in some of our critical countries like the US and France right now, even post-Brexit, we know how much of our trade is going to French ports, is a disproportionate response for the potential benefit we will get, because we're not going to seal the island by that measure. We still have the issue of Northern Ireland. And so it's a disproportionate cost and potential for our business model in comparison to other countries which we could suffer from.
You also mentioned the reputational damage that you believe would be done.
Well, we've already been one of the strictest ones on the hotel quarantine. That message is going out about Ireland being closed for business. We're not talking about, this is not talking about international tourism here. We're talking about essential business reasons for the assets that are here. Firstly, that subject matter experts come in to actually fix problems that we have. But also, in many cases, the investors also will need access to this. The idea, if it was short and sharp, might be justifiable if it's coordinated. But the real question is, how long will the quarantine be in place for? What will be the conditions on which they'll be released? And also, will it be that people who are absolutely vaccinated can come? So these are the type of messages that would be important to have, rather than the blanket statement that says we're just adding whatever 43 countries to the list.
Professor Aoife MacLeod, you feel that this is proportionate and necessary?
I think if we're trying to get this situation under control, we should have a comprehensive system. It shouldn't be just a short list of countries that are included. It should be essentially arrivals from any origin, because and we see already the cost, and there's cost to business as well. And I think domestic business is important. Domestic activity is important. At least it is to the people who are living here. And that's suffered hugely from our failure to deal with this properly. And unfortunately, we know it now. We know that last summer we had effectively eliminated the virus, and by not implementing quarantine, then we let it all start off again. And in December, we let the B.1.1.7 variant in again. And now we have the B.1.351, the so-called South African variant, which is no longer just in South Africa. Far from it. It's in, I think, about 60 countries now, including France. That we don't want to let that one in either. That's very worrying, and it is. And there's the P1 variant from Brazil. We have to keep these out. We have to get the situation back under control. It's proportionate, because without doing that, we are just letting this drag on, and there's too much suffering.
That's the risk, isn't it, Danny? That if we don't do this, we prolong everything here, because we're relying on the vaccine rollout to work, and to work within a set time frame now. And if we allow these variants in, and we don't know how the vaccine reacts and how it can counter some of them, we could be in trouble again for a much longer period of time.
As I said at the start, Claire, it's not to suggest that there'll be a mass opening up on this moment, but it's the issue about closing down. Like, one of the questions I suppose would be interesting from Emer, how long do you consider that the quarantine will be in place for in the context of wide-scale vaccinations?
Aoife, can you answer that question?
Well, it does depend then on what happens in other countries. So, you know, if we get Europe-wide, for example, if the rollout goes well, and in the UK we already see a great impact of that, when the vaccination is rolled out, that's going to change the situation drastically. But we have to be prepared that if a new variant comes up in some part of the world that is dangerous and is not covered by the vaccine, we should be reacting to that. But within Europe, for example, when the vaccination program progresses, that's when you talk about the Irish population will be protected, and the potential visiting population will also be less likely to be carrying any virus. So that's the vaccine is brilliant, and it changes everything. It gives us, in a sense, a time frame that we're dealing with, and we have to talk about how do we make life as good as possible in the time until the vaccine is rolled out, and how do we minimise the chances of new variants arriving. So, both of these things come into it. But the vaccination will be, the comprehensive rollout of the vaccine would basically be, your endpoint, notwithstanding new variants coming up in some part of the world, which, you can consider like a whole new pandemic, unfortunately.
And in your view, Aoife, dealing with these health concerns, does that override the concerns that the EU wasn't fully consulted, that they're saying it's reported that the plans could represent a major breach of European citizens' rights to travel freely?
Well, in terms of the legislation, what I understand from, I'm not a legal expert, but what I understand from talking to people who are, is that, there is, in terms of the freedom of movement, there's possibility of curtailing that freedom on substantial public health grounds, demonstrable public health grounds, which the pandemic clearly is. I think if there's a mistake here, it might be in how the government has maybe proceeded with this and how they've handled it. It's their job to get these things right. It's their job to draft the legislation correctly. And I don't know what's happened there, if they have made mistakes in that regard. But what, in terms of the actual law, it is possible on public health grounds temporarily, and with good reason and demonstrable reasons, to curtail the freedom.
Yeah, and Danny, I know you say we're an outlier here, but we're also in a very unique position because we are an island nation.
Well, we're not a sealed island nation because we share jurisdiction on the island, and what Britain does vis-a-vis France, for instance, they said they were going to do it. They've backed away from that now. And it's our comparative position with other societies. There's a kind of a loss in terms of what actually generates the vast amount of resources that we've had to be able to pay the pandemic unemployment payment, to scale up in our health system and so on. It has been from our globalised hub. It has been from those sectors that have been allowed trade. And this is about not sending out the signal is that we're closed off, because the question I was asking him is, how long would this be in place in the case of a vaccination? I didn't get an answer to that. I didn't get, because if we're attempting to close down, what I don't believe would actually manage to keep the variants out, given the porous nature, the damage that can be done to our business model here is very significant in contrast to other jurisdictions that are already ahead of us on the vaccination rollout. We're a globalised hub, not just a European hub. We're competing against other jurisdictions like Israel, like the United States, and like the United Kingdom, who are ahead of us right now in the vaccination rollout.
Well, Professor Aoife McLeish, let's go back to that point then that Danny would like answered and addressed. Is this a temporary measure until we get our vaccination regime up to the point where 80%, say, of the population here, the adult population, is vaccinated?
Something like that, probably, but I mean, I'm sorry if I can't give a totally definitive answer, but it does depend a bit on, also new variants arising in other countries and not letting this all start off again. But just on the point of the economic impacts, I'm not an economist either, but we were listening to economists yesterday who were comparing countries who, dealt with this pandemic effectively and not, and you see that the ones who dealt with the public health measures and protected public health also protected their economies well. And the idea that we need the money to pay for the PUP and all of the crisis in the health service, yes, that's true. But if we could have avoided the need for the PUP and the crisis in the health service, that would be, we'd be having a different conversation. So we're talking about avoiding those expenses, not paying the bill. And that's what we're trying to do. And also trying to get quality of life back for people. This has been already going on far too long. We have had many steps along the way where we could have avoided things getting this bad. And we have failed every time to really properly tackle this. And this is one of the steps. And just to say, quarantine isn't the only thing either. The government are still haggling, as far as I can tell, over properly resourcing public health units around the country. And this is a year into a public health crisis. So there's more than one thing that needs to be done here. But quarantine is an important part of it.
Danny, a listener wants to know, can IBEC explain exactly what type of travel could be more important than society as a whole getting through the last stages of a pandemic, which is a once-in-a-century event? There's no business trip more essential than that, says our texter.
Now, that's quite a naive statement to make, actually, because one of the features of both the infrastructure is already here, subject matter experts to fix the machines to keep the systems going is one tangible way. But it's also in terms of the networks to try and make sure that we get the commercial contracts in terms of membership. Other countries, particularly those in Europe, have choices in terms of land travel to go to see their customers and get the contracts. For people to do business with each other, if you're closed off, and if you're more draconian and more restrictive, it undermines the business model, which actually is the dynamic for an economy. So the statements, and I am an economist, the dynamic of this in terms of locking down has consequences for our resources. It is actually the prime that gets our domestic economy going economically. Restrictions of themselves and closing off to our globalized model will not sustain our economy and will have disastrous effects for our public health system and for the things that people are putting forward easy answers for right now.
We'll leave it there for now. Thank you both, Danny McCoy from IBEC and Professor Aoife McLeish.